May I introduce myself? Dan Munzizi, co-chairperson of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense. What we did for today was to try and make sure that we arrange a mini workshop just for members to acquaint themselves with the duties and the roles of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense. We will remember that joint has not been functional for quite a long time. And we shall also remember the provisions of the interim constitution with respect to the functions of joint. And today what we shall do is to look at some of the issues which the Constitution briefly raises with respect to the mandates of joint. And one other thing that we shall remember is that joint has been formed in terms of the Constitution. And its mandate is derived from the Constitution as against ordinary parliamentary committees. So we were supposed to be addressed today by the state law advisors and by the department, including our colleague here. So it's unfortunate that the department has requested not to be present today because they've got a strategic plan. But we have the liaison office of the ministry here with us. So we have spoken to them already to say that we really need the department to also come so that we can be all on board with respect to the various duties and the areas of common interest between joint and the portfolio committee. So it will be an ongoing process, but today we would be expecting a presentation to be made by one of our colleagues on the table staff. Thank you.
Good morning to all members of the committee. I trust you can all hear me. My name is Marina. I'm with the National Assembly table. I have been, before Mr. Bapela was redeployed to the executive, we started looking, and he was house chairperson for committees, we started looking at the problems being experienced by the Joint Standing Committee on Defence in meeting and fulfilling its mandate, what happened was that there were some discussions between Mr. Bapela as the House Chairperson and also Mr. Montizzi as the Co-Chairperson and the previous Co-Chairperson from the National Assembly component. So that's how I became involved in this whole thing. It's not as if I'm an expert on the area, but we have been to give advice and to assist. I'll be briefly looking at the role and the mandate of the Joint Standing Committee on Defence, and it's basically a technical kind of presentation. So please bear with me for a while. And then what I'll also do is, because we've known about this problem, I've been fiddling around a bit with looking at the mandates of the Portfolio Committee, because we work with the National Assembly, and with the mandate of the Joint Standing Committee on Defence. So that is a complete, there's been no political input on that particular issue. I haven't solicited any political input, so it's merely a working document, and one can perhaps just maybe look at that, and one can decide what needs to happen further in that regard. Okay, as far as the establishment of the committee is concerned, members will be aware that this committee exists in terms of the Interim Constitution of 1993, Section 228, Sub 3, And then when we started writing the new, that sets out the, it mentions, it says, sorry, let me just go back and say, it says a joint standing committee of parliament on defence shall be established. So basically that is then repeated in the rules of parliament, in the joint rules. It also looks at the composition of the committee. I'll come to that in a moment. It outlines the functions of the committee. And then it goes into talking about the employment of the Defence Force and what the role of that committee is in the employment of the Defence Force. That is as far as the interim constitution is concerned. There's further mention of this committee in the White Paper on Defence, which, if I'm not mistaken, was adopted by Parliament in 1996. And what it says about, I think I just want to briefly, it's really short, I just want to read to members what is said in the White Paper on Defence about this committee. It says, Parliament has a range of significant powers regarding military affairs in order to assert democratic control over the armed forces and defence policy. It has legislative powers. It has legislative powers. It approves the defence budget, and it reviews the President's decisions to deploy the SA in different critical functions. The Joint Standing Committee on Defence has powers of investigation and recommendation, obviously repeating what was in the interim constitution, and such functions relating to parliamentary supervision as may be prescribed by law, for example, in the Defence Act and things like that. But there is not much of that. My colleague, Advocate Bernardo, will be able to expand on that issue. I'm not sure whether he's going to be attending this particular meeting. The Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence has oversight powers in respect of defence intelligence. Okay, we know that has been written into the rules for the Intelligence Committee. The White Paper further says the Department of Defence respects the rights and duty of Parliament to exercise independent and critical judgment on defence policy and practice. The fulfilment of Parliament's responsibilities requires the building of a close and cooperative relationship between the Department and and Parliamentary committees. The Department of Defence will provide whatever assistance, information and comments are required by the committees in order to perform their functions. Now, that has always been the case for a long time. I was looking, for example, at just towards the end of the third Parliament. There was a report published by the PC on defence, on the state of preparedness of the Defence Force. And the whole issue of confidentiality came, was they started off the report by mentioning that a lot of the issues that they had looked at fall in the category of confidential information, and they won't be able to divulge all that information. However, given what they've seen and given what they've investigated, these are the recommendations that they are making. So it is quite possible, within the rules of Parliament and within, if that cooperative relationship exists, for that confidential issue or confidential issues to be handled. Okay, let me just go on about, and then it says, and this I think is the important part in the Defence Paper from Parliament's point of view. Parliamentary and public scrutiny and debate will only be meaningful if there is sufficient transparency on military matters. A measure of secrecy will undoubtedly be necessary in order to safeguard national security interests, the lives of military personnel, and the integrity of military operations. However, the governing constitutional principle is freedom of information. Exceptions to this principle will be limited, specific, and justifiable in a democratic society, and here comes the important thing, and will be dealt with in legislation. Now, to date, we don't have that legislation. Even though this committee exists in terms of the interim constitution and the fact that in the transitional arrangement it goes on to exist, the whole issue of, it is not like the Defence Committee, which has a separate act and provides, this committee does not deal with confidential information only. It can, but just as any other committee of Parliament can deal with confidential information. It might, because it is a Joint Standing Committee on Defence and because the PC is a PC on Defence, there might be more occasion than, for example, the Committee on Public Works to deal with confidential information. But the rules of Parliament do provide for that kind of issue. So, but I think this particular bit in the White Paper on Defence, which was adopted by Parliament at that time, is quite important, and I think that is the ground from which one should be working, because this is also was the basis on which the 1996 constitution, things, the role of the Defence Committee was then determined. As I've mentioned, the establishment of the committee, that what happened when they did the 96 constitution, as you know, this committee was no longer contained in the main part of the constitution. It was retained as part of the transitional arrangements. It's item 24 sub 1 of schedule 6, which deals with transitional arrangements. And that particular part also says that if you wish to change this particular arrangement, it doesn't need a constitutional amendment. All you need is a simple 75 bill to either repeal this or to take the provisions of this particular item and put it in, for example, in the Defence Act. Because some of the provisions in this particular item can be taken up in the Defence Act. That would actually be the appropriate place for that. In a document that the legal advisers did for the previous Parliament's Rules Committee, it identified Section 227 and 228 of the Interim Constitution, and it said that there's a functional basis for the existence of those provisions, but that they can be taken, they would appropriately be accommodated in the Defence Act. Okay. Then the establishment of the committee, basically what is contained in the Constitution is then repeated in the Joint Rules, in Joint Rules 120A to 120C. And that deals with the establishment of the Joint Standing Committee on Defence. Now we come to the composition of the committee. Now this, I think, lies at the heart of this committee's practical functioning problems. Because it is by far the largest of Parliament's committees. It is almost as large as the Constitutional Review Committee used to be. Now, the Constitutional Review Committee was easy to solve because its membership could be changed by the Joint Rules Committee of Parliament. So that is what they've done. They've now reduced the Constitutional Review Committee membership from 45 to, I think, 17, if I'm not mistaken now. So that committee is now able to function like a normal parliamentary committee. Section 228, except for the fact that it provides for the establishment of this committee of yours, it also determines how the membership is worked out. It gives a specific formula, and it says that all parties in the National Assembly that have more than 10 members are entitled to membership of this particular committee. And then it also, as I said, it goes further and it determines a specific formula. Now that means that at the start, no defence committee, that Joint Standing Committee on Defence of any parliament will have the same number of people, because as the composition of the, or the proportionality of the parties changes, the membership also changes. Now we advised at the start of the fourth parliament on the membership of this committee as it should be for the fourth parliament, and that membership was after applying the formula, and it also deals with certain fractions and things like that, but after applying all of that, it came to the fact that this committee in this parliament has to have 37 members. Now that's a huge committee by any standards. I mean, the ANC has to have 26 members, the DA must have 6 members, COPE must have 3 members, and the IFP must have 2 members. So, and furthermore, the 93 Constitution and the Joint Rules are silent on the number of NCOP members which should serve on this committee. However, in the third parliament, 9 NCOP members, because of the 9 provinces, served on this committee, and we recommended that this practice continue in the fourth parliament, and that was agreed to. So the parties were invited to nominate members. So basically what we are saying that is that because this committee's composition is determined in terms of statute, you cannot have less than 37 members. You need to have that in terms of the statute. So if you don't have that, then you'll have a problem functioning and you'll have a problem taking decisions if you don't have that composition. Unfortunately, because as I said, it makes for an unwieldy committee. Everybody who works, all members are involved in more than one committee, so it really becomes hard to have this committee meet and be practical and be able to get down to business and do its work as it should be done. Then the functions of the committee. The functions of the committee are also set out in the Constitution in this interim provision. This is just the basic outline. The nitty-gritty is a bit more detailed, and I think I must leave it to my colleague, Peter, your researcher, to go into more detail about exactly, you know, what the finer detail of what these functions are. But they basically to investigate and make recommendations on the following things: the FNDF's budget, its functioning, its organization, armaments, policy, morale, and state of preparedness. And as you know, most of these things also overlap with the functions of the PC and the Select Committee. And then it must perform any functions relating to parliamentary supervision as may be prescribed by law. That is, for example, the employment of the Defence Force. There you also have a role. Now, this is a role that was, or the next one is a role that was given to this committee by the Joint Rules Committee in 2004. Now, in terms of the National Conventional Arms Control Committee, or in terms of that act, Parliament has to consider quarterly and annual reports submitted by that committee to Parliament for scrutiny. I can also quickly just, I want to refer on that issue back to the White Paper. As I said, this function was given to this committee. It's not by statute, it exists in terms of the Joint Rules Committee. It was decided that this would be the most appropriate committee for the NCACC reports. I just want to read to you what the White Paper says in terms of this particular thing. The principles stated in the White Paper on Defence are in alignment with the NCACC rationale and principles, which state that the government will take the following into account when evaluating arms sales. It will be guided by respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms in the recipient country. Secondly, it will consider cases where the political, social, cultural, religious, and legal rights are seriously and systematically violated by the authorities of that country. Thirdly, it will look at the internal and regional situation in the recipient country in the light of existing tensions or armed conflicts. Four, the record of compliance of the recipient country with regard to international arms control agreements and treaties. Fifthly, it will look at the nature and cost of the arms to be transferred in relation to the circumstances of this recipient country, including its legitimate security and defense needs, and the objective of the least diversion of human and economic resources for armaments. And then the last point, the degree to which arms sales are supportive of South Africa's national and foreign interests. It says the White Paper on Defense establishes certain arms control processes and structures. Conventional armaments and related technology may not be imported, transferred through South Africa, or marketed or exported abroad without a duly approved permit. The applications will be subject to a multi-departmental review process. The NCACC will serve as the ministerial control, policy and decision-making authority. And then they say an independent inspectorate will be established to ensure that all levels of the process are subject to scrutiny and oversight. But as we know, in terms of the law, they are also required to submit reports to Parliament, and those reports come to you. They are supposed to be annual reports, and they are supposed to be quarterly reports. And that is an obligation in terms of statute that the NCACC committee is supposed to comply with. Okay, your next function is that you report on both houses to any matter referred to this committee. There may be a case where something which is not in terms of statute or whatever, if there's a special report that comes to Parliament or whatever, that the presiding officers feel would be most appropriately dealt with by this committee, refer to you by the House or by the presiding officers, and then this committee could be required to report on it. And then obviously, as with all committees, the committee is required to report to the Houses on its activities at least once a year. Just say how many meetings you had and membership, etc., and things like that. Okay, the employment of the SANDF, as we all know, the President must inform Parliament if the SANDF is employed for service in defence of the country or in fulfilment of international obligations. Now, this is where you are also written in, this is also in section 228. It says that if Parliament is not sitting at the time, the President must summon the Joint Standing Committee on Defence. Now, that is in the interim provisions, that's still binding. In the new one, it just says the committee responsible for defence or something to that effect. It's a more generic kind of description. It does not refer specifically to the Joint Standing Committee on Defence. Oh, it refers to the appropriate oversight committee. Appropriate oversight committee and not to the Joint Standing Committee on Defence. But in terms of the interim provision, transitional arrangement, which still applies, it is the Joint Standing Committee on Defence. And it says that if Parliament is not sitting at the time in which the President informs us of employment of the Defence Force, then the President must summon the Joint Standing Committee on Defence. Now, that's unusual. Because normally only the chairs summon, you know, the chairs can ask for a meeting of a particular committee, but in this case the president is given a special power for the committee to meet expeditiously, but not later than 14 days after the employment has started. Just in terms of the employment, and I'll tell you now why, I'll get to the reason why I'm mentioning this. Section 2285 says, Parliament may by resolution terminate any employment referred to in section 2271A, B or E, but such termination of employment shall not affect the validity of anything done in terms of such employment up to the date of such termination or any right, privilege, etc., etc. But the fact is that Parliament can by resolution terminate a particular employment under specific circumstances. So that is a very important power that Parliament has, and one that must not be relinquished easily. And then basically all I just say here is that, as members are aware, I don't think I need to say we've been grappling with this for more than a year now, since the new committee was established, or the new parliament came together, fourth parliament came together, is the fact that there's a huge overlap between the functions of the Joint Standing Committee and the House Committees on Defence, PC and Select Committee. And we know there have been problems, but they need to be sorted out, and one needs to find the way in which one needs to find a solution to the problem, because obviously until it's done, Parliament's oversight function will suffer, and which makes for a weak Parliament, which is what nobody wants, I'm quite sure. Okay, I think that is as far as my the next thing that I want to show to members is just, as I said, I have a little document that I worked on. How do I close this thing? Can someone help? Oh, there we are. Sorry. Just do it there. Okay. The next thing is just, it's as I said, literally a working document. It's a working document that I've been working on, which has have not solicited any political input on this yet. It has not been to the presiding officers. It has not been to the Rules Committee, which is the logical place where these things would go in the first place for the process to start. Okay. What I'm suggesting is that one tries and breaks down the functions or the overlap or the functions of the Joint Standing Committee on Defence and the PC on Defence. I've now looked at the PC because we work with the National Assembly. Obviously, the Select Committee, it will be mostly what the PC is doing as well, if I'm not mistaken. I'm saying that one could say that the Joint Standing Committee on Defence could consider and report on the employment of the SANDF in fulfilment of its international obligations or in defence of the country, as it is doing at the moment. There's also, it can make recommendations to the Houses on a declaration of a state of defence by the President, because that's also an urgent matter. You need the input of both Houses on a state of defence. So it's quite logical that it would come to the Joint Committee, because that would be the fastest to meet than having separate Houses and separate decisions taken by the Houses. So it can investigate and make recommendations on all reports submitted to Parliament by the National Conventional Arms Control Committee, as it is at the moment, quarterly and annually. Now, there's provision for a particular committee in the Rules of Parliament, which is called the Joint Committee on Oversight and Security Matters, and that includes its Joint Rules 117, and that is basically the reason why that committee has never been established, is because of the existence of this particular committee. Now, that committee is supposed to be looking at the oversight of the police and the Defence Force, the South African National Defence Force, South African Police Service. But obviously that oversight function is already being performed by the PCs in the first place. But in the second place, because of the existence of this committee, you cannot establish that committee, because it will have basically the same functions as your committee has at present. So that's all the time it's been on the rule book, it's never been established at the start of each parliament when they establish the parliamentary committees. And What I'm saying is that one of the things that is recommended, or that is part of those rules for this particular committee that they want to establish, is an annual overview, strategic overview of the SANDF. Now, what we've been thinking is that an overview of the SANDF is huge. I mean, it's a huge undertaking. What we want to suggest is that they conduct a strategic overview of the SANDF with reference to the following matters: transformation, integration, equity, morale, and combat readiness. And then that the overview and recommendations flowing from that overview get submitted in the middle of the life of a particular parliament. In other words, a new parliament comes in, the JSC will then do the overview, conduct the overview for the first, say, 2 years of the existence of the committee. It then submits its recommendations and that particular overview, gives parliament an opportunity to grapple with that, and then it, at the end of the life of the parliament, it submits a report on how the recommendations that it made were implemented. So as part of the oversight function of parliament, that also comes into this thing. It could also liaise and report on civil-military relations, which is something that is mentioned in the white paper on defense. It can exercise over and make recommendations on matters pertaining to military veterans. I'm proposing that maybe the JSC should be looking, because it's a joint matter for both houses, the matter of military veterans. But obviously any legislation dealing with military veterans would be dealt with by the House committees. And then it would report to both houses on any matter referred to it in terms of statute, or any matter referred to it by the presiding officers, and then report to the houses on its activities once a year. Now, as opposed to those particular functions, the PC on defence could, and these are basically the functions that are contained in the rule book at the moment, which the PC is doing: exercise oversight over the Department of Defence and defence-related entities, including the Defence Force Service Commission. It would process all defence-related legislation, because this committee is not competent to process legislation. It would exercise oversight over the budget, strategic plan, and annual report of the Department of Defence. Exercise oversight over the strat plans and annual reports of all defence-related entities. Exercise oversight over the rationalisation, restructuring, function, organisation, structure, staff, and policies of the department. Now, that's an existing rule, so it's doing that anyway. Then again, report on any tasks assigned to it by the House and in terms of statute, and report to the House on its activities once a year. Now, that would, I think, that sort of, there's still some overlap then between the two committees, but it would be less than it is at the moment. If you do it in that particular way. But as I said, this is a document. I've put the stakes quite clearly that there's been no political input. What I say furthermore is that there have been calls for the composition of the Joint Standing Committee on Defence to be adjusted, as the current composition is unwieldy and impedes the committee's functioning. To adjust the composition would require repealing Section 228(3) of the interim provisions in the Constitution. And as I say, the committee's mandate is set up in the same section. We don't need, as I said, a constitutional amendment to do this. It's a normal Section 75 bill, which could be dealt with by the PC. Obviously, for that kind of decision to be made, it would have to go to the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee would then either agree, or it would be discussed there, and it would be taken further there. What I'm saying is that interim rules, for example, the composition of this committee, the composition would, like for other committees, it would say in the joint rules that the composition of this committee is determined by the joint rules committee of a particular parliament. So every time when they establish committees, like they do for other committees, when they decide on the size of a committee, they do it, it could be done in terms of the rules. And what I'm saying is that one could propose interim rules for a trial period to see whether it works, and whether it's practical and feasible, and then or whether one should look at other options, and one could implement it for a year and see if it works. But that's, as I said, this is just my suggestions and things that I've been thinking about a bit. I've had one or two sleepless nights about this, but not that many. But for me the important thing is that it would be for the good of Parliament if both our committees or all our committees function efficiently and effectively, and I think that's what all members want. And for a cooperative relationship with the executive, I mean, it's to everyone's advantage. And that's it. Thank you, Mr. Montici, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your presentation. I hope honorable members have got the last slide, which Nadine was presenting to us, the very last one. This one?
Yeah, the working
group. Yeah. Yeah, that one. Honorable members, while we are still doing research in order to grapple with the membership of the committee, because we know that we have been having this problem consistently, we solicited that time the assistance of the state law advisors and also the assistance of the department. So the state law advisors were able to produce more or less the same thing that Merlin has presented to us. This one on the proposed mandates of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense. So most of these duties, they are derived from the interim constitution. And once you want to get them and extract them from the interim constitution, you refer to an annexure in the current constitution. This current constitution, it is able to refer you back to the interim constitution with respect to those aspects which are still applicable, which are in the interim constitution. So what we are saying is that the interim constitution is able to define precisely the duties and the responsibilities of joint. Because it is within that terrain, within that arena, that the joint composition has been conceived. Now, with respect to the department, what the department wanted to do as well was also to come in and make a presentation, most in particular with respect to some of the most sensitive areas which joint defense might be dealing with. And also with respect to whether information can be made available or not, whether some of the meetings of joint can be made open or closed. So it's unfortunate that the department right now, as the apology states, they have been summoned to this strategic workshop. But we hope that in future we will be able to get wind of other issues and other matters which the department would like to contribute. But for now, these are the distinctions which the state law advisors, and fortunately, Marlene has been able to capture them as well. Welcome, Chairperson. I don't know if the department would like Sue?
Thank you very much, Chair. I just would like to ask Marina a question. What was the intent of setting up a Joint Standing Committee on Defence?
I've been trying to find, I've been trying to access the 1996 Constitution, you know, the theme committees that looked at the establishment, but I'll need to go back to the Hansard of the 93, but you see, the problem is the interim constitution was basically drawn up at CODESA, you know, and so it's very difficult to access records of that. And, I mean, we weren't really privy to the discussions around the reasons for it, but I know from what I remember of that period, because I was around then already, part of the furniture, but what I remember from the talk and the things was the fact that because of our history, they wanted like the Germans did, you know, after the Nazi era. They wanted civilian and public sort of access to and not control over the military, but you understand what I'm saying? They wanted scrutiny over that and oversight over those issues. There's talk in the white paper of a position that they wanted to create, and that was never created. They talk about that the Department of Defense supports, and this was in 96, the creation of the post of military ombudsman, whose main duties are to monitor adherence to democratic civil-military relations, undertake investigations at the request of Parliament, and investigate complaints against the SANDF by military personnel and members of the public. So I think the whole gist of, and the reason for a joint standing committee on defense is because you had two houses, and there would be certain areas in which they wanted both houses. I mean, it was within the mandate of both houses to look at those particular issues. And I think that was also before we had the practical experience of that we battle to make joint committees work as effectively as the separate house committees work. So I think that the thinking was that it's something that falls within the ambit of both houses, and that's why a joint committee would be appropriate. It's also, you'll notice that the interim constitution on several issues, like the constitutional review committee, is also a joint committee. It's for a lot of issues, it recommended joint committees. And things that were sort of had a crossover kind of thinking. If one thinks carefully about it, unless you do this kind of breakdown of function, there's not really, I mean, and I can get into big trouble for saying that, but there's not really a need for the Joint Standing Committee on Defense, really, if you start thinking about how things have evolved. But that's a political decision. So if they feel that there is a need for this particular committee and that there is particular things that this committee could do, I mean, by all means, they should do it. But Parliament creates its own committees. But I do think that it's time for us to look at what we do, you know, the way in which this whole thing is set up. We're 16 years down the line from democracy, and we almost 17, and from the 96 constitution, we're 14, almost 15 years down the line. So it's time to revisit those things and see whether, you know, what is working and what isn't.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I've really got three points. My own view is that there probably is some merit in considering the oversight mechanisms in Parliament in respect of the Defence Force. But I would be very hesitant to agree to a division of functions which would limit the powers of the Portfolio Committee on Defence and Military Veterans. We might agree on some kind of division of functions, but I would be very hesitant to limit the powers of the Portfolio Committee on Defence and Military Veterans, simply because of this. If the Minister of Defence manages somehow to colonise this committee, I would not want those functions then, or those aspects of the Defence Force to be warehoused in this committee. The Portfolio Committee on Defence and Military Veterans has wide powers, wide functions, and can really look into any matter that it chooses within the Defence Force. So I would not want to limit the Portfolio Committee on Defence and Military Veterans functions. The other thing that I want to be absolutely clear on, and I'd like the presenter to tell us this, there is nothing in the rules, nothing in the legislation or nothing in the rules that requires the Joint Standing Committee on Defence to meet in closed sessions. I'd like that confirmed. The third is, I see in terms of the rules that the quarterly reports of the National Conventional Arms Control Committee fall within the ambit of this committee. Now, this committee has been established. Those quarterly reports are presumably now lodged with this committee, and I would like those reports immediately circulated to members of this committee. The third, this Parliament has never had sight of those quarterly reports. It is a huge indictment of this Parliament, and I would like those reports immediately circulated to members of this committee. And when we discuss the program, the National Conventional Arms Control Committee is going to have to be a priority. Thank you.
Mr. Honourable Chair, just to go back to 94, 95, when these committees were established, we should remind ourselves But at that stage, we were busy with the integration of 7 different defense forces in South Africa. And there was a lot of distrust between the people. We got in the British military assistant team to come and facilitate the integration. There was a lot of discussions about the capability of the armament, to build armament, because some of the people thought that it's not necessary to have an armaments industry, because you can build anything in the Eastern Europe from warehouses and whatever it was. So it was a question of bringing people together and to get trust in the defense force to go through the upsizing and the downsizing. That was the reason. Maybe we have completed the process, we can then, but that was the history of the Joint Standing Committee. Hello, Chief. What the Honourable Member was saying was that a joint was conceived that time because of the integration of the forces during that time, and that he thinks that the integration has taken place, and that it might not be necessary to continue to monitor the integration since we have passed the...
Mr. Chair, that's not what I'm saying. I said that the integration went over a period of years on. But I think if there's time now to monitor the defense force, I think it's very appropriate to see what has happened over the period of time. What we envisage at that stage as a new born and sized defense force and where we stand today. So I think we must really go into good oversight, because I think the question that one must ask yourself, do we get money for value out of our defense force?
Okay, can you just hold on for a second? Just a brief history, just very, very briefly. You see, with the World Trade Center, the negotiations which were taking place, you had all these political parties which were trying to negotiate with the Nationalist Party at that time. But now, when you came to the clauses of the interim constitution, where you are supposed to deal with the police, that is the state machinery, the SADF, that time the SADF, there were problems in that area. Because what you had was the oversight over the police, I mean the oversight over both the police and the military was played by the military themselves and by the police themselves. Now, it was the question of whether you would have a commissioner of police who is a civilian who can be able to participate at that level, and whether you could have the chief of staff or the chief of the South African Defense Force being a civilian. Now, all those issues were discussed, you see. But the most important aspect of it all is, how are you going to be able to integrate and monitor development within the South African National Defense Force in terms of integration? Integration was supposed to take place at all levels of the South African National Defense Force, in the Army, in the Air Force, in SAMS, and also with the Navy. But now, subsequent to that, some of the political parties were insistent that it should not be an ordinary committee of parliament that would be able to play oversight over the transformation, over the integration, over the morale, over all those issues. It must be a special committee of parliament, and it must be a joint committee of parliament that plays that responsibility. Now, it is the question of whether integration, since the past 16 years, has been achieved. The upward movement of all non-statutory forces within the South African National Defense Force, whether it has been achieved.
whether the entire transformation of the South African National Defence Force has been achieved, whether women within the South African National Defence Force have been affirmed. You see. So, joint is most in particular responsible for that area to ensure that the readiness of the South African Defence Force in terms of any threats externally, the SANDF would be able to stand against it. So it is a totality of all the problems that we had in during the period of apartheid as against the progress that might have been made within the period of democracy. So you have to contrast whether you have been able to achieve everything, whether you have been able to destroy all the vestiges of racism within the force and so on. You see. So by and large, when you look at the duties which have been identified, which joint have to tackle, those duties were identified in the interim constitution. So those are the tasks which joint is employed with. So annually, joint must be able to say, in terms of the army, this is where we are. In terms of the Navy, this is where we are. In terms of the morale and so on. So it's a question of whether that cycle has been completed conclusively in terms of transformation and all those issues. But if we are certain that apartheid has died in the South African National Defence Force and there is total transformation, it means there's no need for this committee. It means this committee must not function. But we know it is not the case. We know it is not the case. We know the problems. The last time they came to make a presentation, we knew about the upward movement, you know, the layer of captains and lieutenants, you know, who continue to be, you know, and also at the bottom, you know, the troops, most of those, the intake and so on, most in particular the disadvantaged. So there has not been that proper upward movement. So it is the task of this committee. This committee does not pass legislation. You don't pass legislation. Like they say, you don't look at the budget of the ministry. The minister does not present a budget to you. Although you can be able to ask questions about whether there are resources in order to do 1, 2, 3. But matters of the budgets and matters of finance are the responsibilities of the portfolio committee and a number of other issues which also reside within the portfolio committee. So it is not the question of whether honorable members think that certain tasks are going to be taken away from the portfolio committee. It is the question of what the interim constitution enjoins us to do. Those tasks which the interim constitution says we should do, those are the ones that we should do. Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you, Chairperson, for this elucidating statement you have made. You know. So I think that I don't know, because what I'm having is a serious problem of we are bound by the interim constitution, of which we are not using it now. We are not even having it with ourselves. But the problem is, I think that from the constitution itself, it provides that we must make a law to either regularize whatever was there in the interim constitution or take it out. I think that after 16 years of democracy, really we cannot still be speaking in terms of the interim phase. We must be able to move forward. If, let's take for example, if the structures, just like the Joint Standing Committee on Defense, if it has not achieved its work, together about what has intended it not to achieve it, ne? So that if it has achieved it, why must it still continue living as you've presented it here? But I think that the report which was given by Ulland Marina on the other side is very elucidating. and helpful. I think that's the starting point. And then what the Honourable Mayor has raised there, definitely when we look at the issue of state of preparedness of the Defence Force, that issue cannot be something for public consumption. I think that would be dangerous because it could expose us, so we like it or not. If we're going to deal with issues of defence, there are certain things which should be confidential. But as our constitution imposes upon us that whatever we do must be as transparent as far as possible, and maybe that the issues of intelligence are dealt with in the Joint Intelligence Committee, whatever, so that there's nothing here. But I think as we're dealing with this thing, we must also identify the areas, because really we cannot speak about the state of preparedness of our different force or state of readiness of our different force in public, because then the enemies can come and just walk over us if they know that there's no force. But I think that this presentation was made today is a good basis for us to do some work so that we apply our minds properly. So I think that the way we move forward, I don't see us making any decisions. For example, just like the issue of the National Convention for Arms Control, really, to whom we sell our armaments, whatever, it can also be very problematic. You cannot make it public as easily, but what is critical is that the committee, as from what I'm seeing here, we just have to monitor that information. It must be within the committee. The committee must have that information so that we see that that committee is complying with our constitution. But we cannot make that information public. We cannot make it public, because sometimes today is your friend, next week is your enemy, the person you're dealing with. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. We also welcome the presentation, and also the summary presentation from the Chair. Chairperson, I'm not sure whether we are in the confines of the workshop, because in my view, the purpose of the workshop is not to question whether the committee should continue to exist or not, but is to look at the functions of the committee so as to strengthen our work. And if I am mistaken, my colleagues will correct me. It is only frustrating that in the illustrations that are presented, we now find ourselves to be constituted by an interim arrangement. Now, and that's the fear that I have for us in discussing whether do we continue to exist or whether do we look into the functions of the committee. And my view is that let us put aside this mode that says let's interrogate whether should we continue to exist or must we close ourselves, because I don't think we have got that authority as a committee to close ourselves. If there is any reason for this committee to cease to exist, I think somewhere else they will find a reason to come up with a legislation that will see the end of this committee. I happen to have served in the review committee of the defense before I became a member of parliament. And in the discussions, including the founding principles of the Joint Standing Committee, I can tell you now that the functions of this committee have not come to an end and it will not come to an end, because the responsibilities of this committee is a responsibility that is not a function of the defense committee. And hence, I'm afraid that we enter into that debate, because that debate is not going to take us anywhere, and it will not empower us for going forward as far as our functions are concerned.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Co-Chairperson. I would definitely agree with Honorable Mazia on this one. If you were to clarify what the committee wanted to know, it will be its functions to unpack the functions. Things like close meetings, as he was saying, clarifying the gray areas between the portfolio committee and the joint standing committee, looking at oversight matters, the confidentiality part of it. Those are specific things that we wanted in order that we must function. Not the overall thing whether we need to exist or not. That is none of our business. We can't dissolve ourselves. If somebody thinks we are not effective, then they will dissolve us. Things like the legislation. How do we take all of those things that are still in the interim constitution and make them functional? Do we need the regulations? Do we need to go to the Joint Rules Committee and say, this is what we want in order for this committee to function? Those are the basic things that we were looking for. In terms of confidentiality, if they are there are specific areas or matters that must be done in within closed doors, surely those exist in the army, in the defense force. You can't tell everybody about your armaments or whatever, or your special forces and so on. Those definitely will be in close. How do we deal with that? But the fact remains, those things, there must be oversight over those things, whether closed or not. There must be oversight over those things. And what happens if we are not vetted and we get, how do we go on oversight over those things? Maybe if, I don't know what happens in the army, if they say, a secret base somewhere, there must be oversight over it. And how do we go there and see if we are not first? All I'm trying to say, we wanted those specifics, not the general thing or what happens in, so that we must function. That is exactly what we want. How do we do those things? What legislation do we need to change? In short, that is exactly. I don't know the terms of reference that you were given, but that is exactly what we were asking for. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first thing I'll just quickly deal with is the issue of closed meetings. Mr. Maynard had a certain question. The Honourable Member Bates also had a question. There is nothing in the rules that requires this particular committee to meet in closed session. I mean, as I mentioned previously, that like all other parliamentary committees, if there is confidential matter serving for this particular committee, it can declare its meetings closed. it's up to the committee to decide whether a matter before it is confidential or not. There are certain rules on that. Okay, let's first just look at the matter of closed meetings. There are certain circumstances under which a committee can declare a meeting closed. And one of those things is the fact that whether what it is considering is of a private nature, that is prejudicial to a particular person. Secondly, whether it's an issue that's protected under parliamentary privilege, whether it's confidential in terms of legislation. Now, in the case of legislation, if a matter is confidential in terms of legislation, obviously it would be a closed meeting. The committee does not have a discretion in that regard. But as far as the issue of a private nature that's prejudicial to a person or protected under parliamentary privilege of concern, there's a proviso that says, and that was challenged last year with a communications committee, where it had to reopen its meeting after it wanted to declare it closed. It is of such that the information, it must be of such a nature that its confidential treatment is for any other reason reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society. So before a committee can declare its meeting closed, it needs to consider the issue that will be before it, and then it needs to decide whether in an open and democratic society, treating this as a confidential document and treating this as a confidential issue is in terms of these requirements, and that in an open and democratic society it's reasonable and justifiable. So there are certain conditions set in which a meeting can be closed. As I mentioned earlier, obviously the Defence Committee, more than maybe a committee such as a normal portfolio committee, would need to declare some of its meetings because of the confidentiality of the issues before it. As far as the NCACC reports are concerned, Mr. Lane has asked for those reports to be circulated. They cannot be circulated because none of them have been tabled since the start of the fourth parliament. The committee has not submitted any of those reports. And as far as the information contained in those reports are concerned, the Act specifies the way in which that information must be made available, which makes its submission to parliament and its tabling, which makes it public, not a sensitive issue. In other words, the Act states the way in which that information must be made available to Parliament. And it does it in such a way that the committee can consider the issue. But as I said, we have not received any of those reports since the start of the fourth Parliament for tabling. So none of those reports have been submitted. So that would be something that the committee would need to look at. As far as confidential documents, okay, closing a meeting, that can either be done, in all cases it's the committee itself that decides to close the meeting. A chairperson or chairpersons of a committee might, by virtue of the information that will be serving before a committee, declare beforehand, when they call a meeting, to declare a meeting closed in terms of the rules. But once that meeting starts, it is up to the committee. If the committee proceeds and it goes on as a closed meeting, you have the tacit agreement of the committee that it wants to be a closed meeting and it wants the committee to be closed. And that it concurs with the decision of the chairpersons. It can, however, set aside the decision by the chairperson and say, we need to declare this meeting open. We don't want it to be closed. So the decision always rests with the committee as a whole. So it's something that will probably, if there's controversy about a particular, on which the committee would vote there. But what I'm saying is that ultimately the decision to close a meeting rests with the committee. It's your decision. If, for example, during the course of a meeting, the committee becomes aware that the information before it will be, for example, prejudicial to a particular person and it wants to close the meeting in terms of this rule, the chairperson can declare, we will now close the meeting to decide whether we want to continue as a closed meeting. So those are the processes which the committee, which you go through. But once again, as I said, there are certain, you need to be aware of the proviso that it must be, reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society that you want to close the meeting. So in other words, if the committee is asked for reasons why it closed the meeting, it needs to be able to provide reasons. In your case, it would be something like, if we didn't do this in a closed meeting, we would be endangering the lives of military personnel, for example. That's reasonable. So one wouldn't do it. But then, as I said, it's the committee that decides. The same goes as far as confidential information is concerned. A minister cannot submit information to Parliament as confidential information unless it is the defense, I mean the intelligence committee. And that gets submitted directly to the committee, does not not come through the processes of parliament. But it's for the committee to decide whether information before it is confidential. So if the minister, for example, submits information to the speaker and the minister requests that information is confidential, then what one would do is that, and I think you have a case like that coming, no, is that to the PC, I think, to the PC. We had an example now in the past week or two where the minister said that the Minister of Defence said that some information was confidential. So what the speaker then did was to refer it to the committee under his signature and say, listen, we have been advised by the minister that this information is confidential. Here it is for your perusal and for your decision. So the committee then decides whether it wants to treat that information as confidential. But it still remains a decision of the committee. And once again, under the same kind of proviso that you have, if members want to look at the rules, it's Rule 47, deals with admission of the public to meetings, whether you close it or not, and when to exclude the public from meetings. And then also the publication of proceedings, evidence and reports is Rule 52 of the joint rules. So it's Rule 47 and Rule 52, if members want to go and look at that particular issue. As for Mr. Marquez, sort of... Yes?
Then if it's a closed meeting, what does it mean? Does it mean, according to the rules, if I go out and go to the papers, there's some sanction?
That will fall under the privilege issue, sir. Then a member can, if a member does go outside and if the committee has declared it a closed meeting,
that's
and
right.
If a member then goes outside and goes, I would presume that there can be a complaint in terms of privilege, a contempt of parliament, and that member would then be in contempt, there would be an investigation whether that member was in contempt of parliament. Because all members are honourable members.
Can we first put it this way, that because it should not be, it should not be a perception that the committee will declare a meeting a closed meeting. The committee has to apply for the right to have a closed meeting. Yes. Yes, the committee cannot just come here and say this is a closed meeting. You see, it can't just come here and say it is a closed meeting. It must apply, it must be known in the ETC, it must also indicate that there will be a period where the committee will not want the press and so forth. But it can't just get into the meeting and say this is a closed meeting, you are not wanted, and these are the matters that we are going to discuss. Now in the closed meeting you are discussing confidential matters, and confidential matters, obviously what it means is that any person who wants to distribute the information that was discussed in that closed meeting and it is confidential matters, that person also must first have the permission of the chairperson, either to address the press or to do whatever. Unless that is executed in a way that it doesn't implicate the person who was in the meeting.
I think we are making headway. It's just that with respect to closed meetings and open meetings, I don't think it's in the interest of Parliament to close meetings. All of us, what we want is to make sure that whatever matters that we deal with, you know, the public would be able to know. So Parliament is about giving information to ordinary citizens about the work that we do. After all, we are public representatives. So we are talking here about those very special circumstances which would warrant the committee to close a meeting. That would be something like a situation of once in 2 years, you know. Not that every week there would be a meeting that would be closed. Definitely not, you see. So all we are saying is, let's understand what the main tasks, the main duties of the committees are, to ensure that we give information to ordinary South African citizens to understand what we are doing, you see. But with respect to those issues, obviously, which are very sensitive, that is very, very clear, you see. Okay, can I just finish very quickly? Now, for honorable members, for honorable members who are interested in the history and, you know, and all that and all that, you've got the defense review and the white paper. The department can make them available to us. Then you can be able to understand the history of the involvement of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense. And even there, the duties are also captured, you see. And then the other document would be the white paper. In fact, both of them have been bonded together. And then the interim constitution as well. So certain provisions of the interim constitutions, the new constitution refers you to them, you see. So in the schedule here, they refer you to the interim constitution and they say they are applicable for those comrades who want to follow the history and understand. And then what we need right now to be focusing on are the duties in order for us to be able to hit the ground running, you see. So we've been able to get wind of what the tasks are and the challenges are that are facing joint defense. So for the purpose of a program of action, for joint to be able to begin to interact with the department and with all the various sections of the South African National Defense Force, we need to be able to come up with our own program and start moving, you see. So today's workshop was in order to be able to assist us to identify the area along which we are going to be able to work, you see. Insofar as that has been is concerned, we have more or less achieved our objectives, you see. But for the background and the other issues, for us to know where we come from as joint and so on and so on, the documents that I have referred to will be able to assist honorable members. The interim constitution, the white paper, the defense review, including this constitution, if you want to refer to those sections which are talking about joint. They'll be able to refer you to the interim constitution. Okay, I'll just give to Marlene and open for 2-3 hands, and then from there we are going to close the meeting.
No, I just wanted to respond to your co-chair and just say that I was not advocating the doing away with this committee at all. I mean, the fact that that I've presented a document which gives a mandate for both committees shows that I'll be thinking about that. But what I was saying is that is a political decision. It's not for this committee or for me. I wouldn't presume to suggest that should be done. So, and as far as the functions is concerned, I did mention that the researcher for this particular committee does have a detailed list of what functions belong or where the overlap is between the functions of the Joint Standing Committee on Defence and the PC. So if members are interested in the detailed list, they can obtain it from Peter.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your statement and reassurance that it is your intention to, so far as possible, keep meetings of this committee open. On the question of open or closed meetings, our presenter said that the litmus test will be reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society. Now, if we, it would seem to me, do as a committee take a decision to close a meeting, then that decision is going to have to be justified. And the justification will have to be as a result of evidence. And so it will be incumbent, in my view, on the department to provide us with a motivation in writing, backed up with evidence, that would be compelling and convince this committee to close a meeting. And the only compelling reasons and the principles that would be, apply would be if the Defence Force could provide evidence and compelling reasons that disclosing information would compromise an existing operation or the life of a serving soldier. If the Defence Force are not able to produce that evidence, then the meeting should be open. That's the first point. The second point, Chair, is you referred to in respect of the program. At some point, I'm sure that we will debate the program of this committee, presumably when we've agreed on the functions. But I would strongly suggest that as soon as possible, we convene a set of open hearings over a series of days on the interim National Defence Force Service Commission's report. It is an official report, it has been submitted to Parliament, and it gives an insight into the state of the Defence Force, and I think would be a good departure point for this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I think that also this act, I agree with you. In order for us to perform optimally, we need to know the history so that we have confidence in what we are doing. So those documents you're referring to, I request that the secretary to the committee ensures that we get them, let's say, by next week, so that we, people who are interested in that, we can go through them in the meantime. And then also even the act which deals with the National Coalition's Armed Control Committee. We can, because I'm worried if he is going to say that the committee must present a report in such a way that it is able to be consumed by the public, it means that a lot of things will be blacking out there. So how then are we going to really have a thorough feel of what is happening there? Because I think that there are certain principles you have put, that you cannot sell to the dispossessed, you cannot sell the armaments to the countries which are going to do. So if we are not going to be get the details of what has been gone to what country, then we might have a problem. But I think that if you can get also that act as part of the package, I'll really appreciate that. Thank you.
No, Chairperson, I've been covered by several speakers.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to make one comment since we have Marina here, because I think that she would find this useful. I think this document's very helpful that she has presented. I wanted to make one practical example, and it's something that really concerned me terribly. The Portfolio Committee in the last Parliament asked for presentations, updates on what we were doing on the borders, which of course they had every right to do. And two senior officers in uniform from Joint Operations came and made a really professional, detailed report on what we were doing on the borders. Which borders, how many people, what kind of equipment, etc. And we sat there and thought that if we were a human trafficker, a drug smuggler, an arms smuggler, we would know exactly which borders to go through and which ones to avoid. Now, I'm saying to you, it's those sort of concerns that we have in defence about open or closed meetings. The fact that the Portfolio Committee then went up to the borders with a contingent of the press to, anyway, to verify this, actually put the whole work in danger. And I think that's what's... It's not a question of hiding information. It's a question of when you're doing operations, what you actually reveal and what you don't reveal. But as the Chair had said, the need to account to somebody is absolutely crucial. I just wanted to give that practical example.
I'm not sure if the researcher is ready. I'm sorry I omitted the researcher. It seems like the researcher would also be able to supplement the input that Marina has made.
Thank you, Che. In the main, I've been covered by what Marina has said. I've distributed the Word document, and I think the only things that she didn't cover was, for instance, to the background, to the Joint Standing Committee on Defense. I also refer to confidentiality and closed meetings, and I also covered the portfolio committees, what they are doing, and it's just that on the last page of that document, it's titled in clarifying the role of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense. I've consulted with colleagues, and we have a slight different interpretation as to what Marina has. She's saying that we should delineate the functions of the two committees. In our discussions, we said that there's nothing that says here that certain things should only be restricted to the portfolio committee. The joint can investigate any defense matter. Because in the first place, it's an independent, autonomous committee. In the second place, it should be viewed as complementary to the portfolio committee. Therefore, we said that, you know, there should be cooperation and liaison between the committees, not the one dictating to the other as to what the program should be, but to avoid, for instance, you know, departmental officials coming down, you know, on a Monday to address the portfolio committee, and then on a Wednesday to come and address the joint, to avoid that kind of thing. So what we then ended up saying is that section 24 or item 24 of schedule 6, you know, carries over section 228 of the interim constitution. So it's still in operation, and if we interpret what is said there in section 228 3D, I think, you know, if we interpret it broadly, then I don't think there should be any clash with the portfolio committee.
Thank you very much, Chief. Thank you very much. Yeah. Two more hands, and then I think I'll be closing the meeting.
Chair, thank you for the opportunity to respond. I'd like to respond to Sue Rabkin, who, with respect, is quite wrong. The briefing on border security, which I attended, and in fact was not in the last parliament, it was during the last term. The briefing included disclosure of the number of troops, or in fact the number of companies deployed on our landward borders, which are about, if I recall correctly, 4,000 kilometers long. Nothing in the briefing compromised an existing operation, and nothing compromised the life of a serving member of the SANDF. Had the generals been disclosing, for example, the whereabouts of soldiers in a border security operation to take place in the next 24 hours, then I think there would be a competitive
Can you just hold on?
But there would be no reason for a meeting of that nature
On a point of order, I don't think we are here to discuss the specifics of the report that was given some other day. It was simply an example of what might happen. So can we deal with what we are dealing with? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I was just pointing out it was a bad example.
Okay. Honorable members, in the light of the presentations that have been made and the responses from colleagues and most in particular from the department as well, we shall be begin to adjourn the meeting, and then we shall be meeting again next week. We have to meet next week sometime in order to look at the program and other issues. If there are still any hands, I've noted you. Louis? Are you covered? Okay, thank you.
Yeah, before we adjourn, I think we need to talk about what's going to happen as from now. We've got the proposed mandates that are very good, but what are we going to do? We can't just sit here and talk and then from there we say we are changed. What's going to happen with this thing in relation to what the portfolio committee? I mean, they've got to look at it even themselves. It's not given that this is what. So before we adjourn, let's talk about that. Or what happens from? Otherwise, we are simply going to file this thing and then look at it, forget about it. So before we adjourn, let's talk about what did we do today and what's going to happen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Tabisa?
Well, I think just in support of the chair, that was part of the thing I was going to say. But one of the challenges of the committee, from what I hear, is that there should be 37, not less than 37 members. And one of the problems in the past years has been that the committee could not reach a quorum. So I think that's one of the challenges that the committee need to deal with, so that its work can continue. Otherwise, you are going through the same experience that we had last time. Thank you.
Yeah, just very quickly on that. The chairperson the chief whip in the NCOP and the chief whip in the National Assembly, they have taken up the process, I think, with the table. And very soon there will be proposals that are going to be put before Parliament for the necessary amendments to take place. So at least with respect to that, there is movement that is going on. The process started last year. I only hope it will be finalized very soon.
In the meantime, Chairperson, what if we suggest that we hold our meetings on Thursday afternoons or even evening, if possible? Then we leave the Friday open. For now, it's a suggestion.
Okay, Louis.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought some of the issues that are being raised in terms of taking the process forward, perhaps I need to clarify that with the administration of the committee. If this committee is also in a position or empowered to have a management committee chair. If not, then indeed it warrants that it be cut down a little bit. But I think, Chair, it would not be for us to start prioritizing cutting down the numbers even before we agree on the program, including matters of matters of scheduling meetings and all that. I think, Chair, that those should by and large be determined by the intensity of the program itself, as we agree on it. My understanding in response to the other co-chair, Honourable Marke, is that has this been a workshop, and I thought that it warrants no resolution in terms of any negotiations between the PC and us here on what we've heard or presented with in relation to the functions and the mandates and all that, because I don't think I heard anything saying that there is a conflict of functioning at this stage, except duplication and perhaps working in relation with each other. So I'm saying, Chair, as far as in my own assessment, I feel that we've set the ball rolling. We've got the information that assists us. Indeed, it's empowering information in terms of knowing what to do. And I think the those that are driving the committee, and from the chair, the administration, I think now we can be we are set for, you know, to start working. And indeed, I think the other member earlier on started to put matters, you know, on the program, issue of the reports that have not been. So that also, if we're starting with that, with the reports, then that would determine as to when and when we are meeting to start looking into the report. When are the people concerned ready to present the report to the committee? So in essence, I would feel, and chair now from the NCOP part, Honorable Muzizi, next week, I'm not too sure. I thought that we dedicate the time to SONA, and so that we get the maximum. In terms of, so that we get the maximum participation, some of us are still have to look for the Jewish. Joking. But the other one is the issue really of the numbers. Of the numbers. I think let's experience, as you answered, if somebody works, if it proves we are new members in the committee like myself and others, so we're not sure whether we would not be meeting. So if we start now saying, yeah, we will not be meeting if we are 37, and we don't know, we have no evidence on that one. So let's start working and see if things are not working. And we must not just try to fix from a theoretical point of view what perhaps doesn't need even to be fixed. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, I think that what I was going to put forward is the issue that the next meeting must deal with the program itself and those things which must be prioritized. I think that from Arena it was very clear that this committee is constituted by a statute which might need an amendment if we're going to deal with that. So we can prioritize that in the next joint committee meeting, that these are the things which must get the attention of the presiding officers, these are the things which must be done by us, these are the things which need the parliament itself. No, I think that's what we are going to promote by that. But I think, Chairperson, this day was very successful. In particular, if you can get the package which you spoke about, then we can hit the road running. And then I'll concur with Honorable Nzimande that next week, comrade, is very hectic. I think that we can think of the meeting for the other week, so that we can correct as much as possible. But then, on the last note, I think that the example made by the parliamentarizing officer of the minister was correct. It's a good example on how we have to consider this thing moving forward, because you might not compromise an existing operation, but compromise future operations. So I think those are the things we'll discuss as we move forward. But I think this meeting was good. We appreciate the input, in particular the inputs from the researcher and from Arena, and then from the PO itself. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I'm a bit reluctant to. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with my colleagues that we should probably meet the week after next, because of course we will be busy with the State of the Nation address Again, I believe that we ought to start off with a series of open hearings on the interim National Defence Force Service Commission report. I wonder if you can confirm whether you're in possession of that report and when you will circulate it to members.
Let me just say that can I just make a presentation on some of these issues before I come to you? Firstly, like I've indicated, that the two chief whips have been given the responsibility to assist the committee to function. Let us resuscitate that particular issue, so this meeting can resolve to write a letter again to the two chief whips in order to assist the committee with the membership and finalize also the issue of the roles. And then secondly, another letter to the speakers and to the chairperson of the NCOP in order to assist the committee to do its work. And then thirdly, with respect to the functions, again, the chairpersons can meet with the chairperson of the portfolio committee in order to finalize the tasks. And then next week we may not have a meeting. Let's leave that to the State of the Nation address. And then that other week we can try to sneak a meeting, because it will be the responses, I think, is the responses going to take place that other week. How many days? 2 days. Tuesday and Wednesday. Can you assist us? The response of the...
I'm not quite sure whether they finalised that date. The first program meeting, as far as I know, is only going to be sometime next week. But the talk, the last time it was only, we had a full day of debate on the Monday, and the President replied on the Tuesday. Now, whether they're going to do it the same, I can quickly try and, I'll just quickly go out and phone, and I'll see if I can get that information for you quickly.
Okay, because what we're trying to do is to organise our meeting week after next, and not next week. Now, as soon as we draft the program and we finalize our program, we will put everything in our program, including the interim commission report. Everything will be in our program. So what we want is that the ministry should be able to lead the report on the day on which would be assigned for the report to be made available, that the ministry must take us through the report. Thank you. Honorable members, we are just trying to find out if week after next we can be able to meet and on which day, but we can also be able to communicate the information to the colleagues. Honorable Masia.
Oh, Chairperson, I was saying that I don't know if it's myself who have got this draft program. And I thought that possibly what would be saying is to say that since we all have the draft program, let us have an opportunity to go and look at the draft program and then make our submissions to the chairperson, and the chairperson finalize the program, because I think all of us have got this draft program. You see, rather than dilly-dallying, pretending that we don't have it in front of us.
Well, what Honorable Masia is proposing is that the draft program that we distributed some time ago, if honorable members can make an input on the draft program and then make their submissions to the chairperson, so that whatever has been proposed can be put across. The debate on the State of the Nation is on Tuesday, week after next, and Wednesday. So it means we may only meet on a Thursday if Parliament is not sitting.
We have got this draft program. Let us go and look at the draft program, make inputs on the draft program for the chairperson to finalize the draft program with his administration and then circulate it back to us. If we are going to meet on the day that we are suggesting, it will reflect in the program and we will get notices and leave it at that.
Okay. Okay. So week after next, on Tuesday and on Wednesday, it is the State of the Nation address debate continuing. And the President will be responding probably on a Wednesday. That's right.
And on the Thursday, I think if it is sitting on the Thursday, I think it would be a short one because we only have study groups and
our Okay. Okay, in the meanwhile, let's take what the proposal from Honorable Nasir to say that members are free to make proposals and make those submissions to the secretary, and then we'll be able to incorporate them. And then the cut off time, let's give members the whole of next week. The whole of next week from Monday up to Friday. So by Monday, we will presume, week after next, that all proposals will be in. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I welcome the opportunity to make an input on the program, and I agree on the process. I wonder, and this is a matter that I raised at our first meeting, if you could instruct the committee secretaries to circulate the chairperson's details. For some reason, we seem to have secret chairpersons. I've been trying to get your contact details for several weeks. If you would please instruct them, and also if I could ask the portfolio committee chair to instruct the committee secretary to circulate those details. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There's my card. I'm not a spook. Just in closing, I just wanted to ask to look at one or two things, especially in this committee. It's as if Honorable Manir, am I pronouncing your name correctly? Mania. Many as if in... Oh, all right. Okay. It's as if he is having oversight over the committee itself, the way he's behaving. But I was thinking that, you see, we're dealing with state security in here, we're dealing with people's lives, and all of us are for that. Defense is a public good and a pure public good, meaning that defense is for everybody, and we are all in there. It cuts across any political parties and so on, because we are talking about people's lives here. So if that might be the approach, and we definitely agree when it comes to that. I don't think we can differ when it comes to people's lives in the defense and security of the country. So it is just my plea that Honorable Mania, don't focus on the committee itself and do oversight on the committee. Do oversight on the security and defense of the country, because we definitely agree in here. If that is the approach, I promise anything that needs to be discussed will be discussed in here openly. Thank you very much.
members, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Okay, sorry, I can't show that. Please rush to as many people as I possibly can.
Thank you.
I come in early
mm-hmm.
because the format is normally like this.
So you just press record.